More at Redback. I saw him at the beach on Monday.
Who?
You.
Mate, listen.
Listen.
Tanzano, son. Tops off, I speak. Game over.
Yeah. You've only put makeup on one eye, though, which is odd. You should tell that story. How you got clawed by a raptor.
That'll come out today.
Yeah. Well, I'll let you intro, Bob. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Listen. Well, this is a special edition of This is Listen Here, Son. Because we've got Bob involved as well.
Are we officially started?
Listen here, son.
Listen here.
So,
what do you do?
Nothing.
Oh, is it like a precursor?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
All good. Is this boom sounding all right?
Yeah.
Trap the boom under the bed. This is not Bob's murking. Don't be concerned.
Yeah.
How you doing, Bob?
Don't get crawling along the floor, son.
Go on, Mark. I'll let you intro, Bob, because you know him far better than everybody else in the world.
Well, obviously the people in MMA, you take one look at him, you're going to know exactly who he is. And Bob's one of my best friends in the game and out the game.
We'll clip that.
But I'm going to have to start a movement. Might not be a popular movement, because everybody loves Bob, except for me. Because, you know, you don't see the real Bob. Bob the cat that turns up at my door. He has my missus making cakes for him. He's in my face. When I wake up after a 16-hour flight from Dubai to Auckland, New Zealand, Bob's in my face. He's too... But anyway, Bob's a legend. And we've been trying to get this for ages.
We've been trying for a while.
Everybody...
Yeah, I've caved in, eh?
Huh?
Yeah.
Caved in today.
We'll give in eventually. We got you eventually. So you're a cut man. You wrap hands for the UFC.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and that's actually your part-time job. You do all the stuff as well, don't you? Yeah. Carpenter.
Yeah, right. That's it, done, yeah.
Former fireman, which is why your fight nickname is Inferno.
We
just decided. Yeah.
Inferno.
Oh, it ain't Lord Chopper, then.
No, Chopper? I mean, Chopper would suit you. I think it's already said. Inferno suits you better, though, Aaron. So you're a cut man, and you wrap hands for fighters. Just talk me through how you got into that, then, to start with.
Well, my background was boxing, Dan, so... Really went through the amateurs, all the way through our amateurs. We had a decent amateur gym, went pro, decent pro gym. And we just kind of took care of our own, really. So it was just a progression from there, really. And then 2007, I had the core, and that's the rest history.
So did you start working with the UFC? Did you start on other promotions like Cage Warriors and stuff?
No, it was 2007 was my start.
Really?
I don't even know what MMA was done.
So what did you change about the wraps then? Because the boxing wraps and MMA wraps are different, right?
Yeah, it's because you got 8 and 10 ounce gloves in boxing.
Yeah.
So MMA is just a small one, so it's just a reduced wrist, smaller, tighter.
And what about cuts and stuff in MMA? You see more because of that?
Oh, yeah, loads more.
Yeah.
Yeah, really. Yeah, loads. Way busier.
Yeah.
Way, way busier.
So, you're on the road with Goddard all the time then, are you? That's got to be hard work. I knew it.
Now you know why I call him Muttley. He's on.
Listen,
we're skin ribs. I was here.
Obviously, do his laugh, Bob.
I'll have to build up for that one, son. Yeah, like you got to build me. You got to build me up for the ribs.
Oh God,
ribs.
So obviously, when Bob, and you can tell, like we from the accent, but we don't live far apart. But he's like. I'm Birmingham, Bob's black country.
Yeah.
And obviously, what the black country means where I'm from, there's three, four areas, Dudley, Wolverhampton, Walsall, and they've got the nickname the black country from back in the day. It was heavily industrialised, steel and coal, and it was just constant black soot clouds. So it was like, it's famous for being called the black country. That's where he lives, and obviously... Even though we're 30 minutes apart, it's like a distinctly different accent.
Yeah, but we're only 45 minutes apart.
And that's distinctly
different. And I speak
normally.
Oh, yeah. You two are just... I mean, we're going to have to subtitle this. They'll think it's Portuguese.
Well, no, when it came out the ocean the other day, when he was going, James Bond, AI. And, like, people picked up on it, obviously, because they'll know. But, yeah, the same, obviously, from Bob, when I started working with him, then we just hit it off. And then I pulled him into MMA, and then he just exploded from there. And yeah, we're always travelling together. It's like a husband and wife.
Which one's which? Are you the husband?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought so, yeah.
You can tell Dan quite. You know Dan. You know Dan.
How did you two meet each other then?
UFC.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's from this.
Oh. So you met working a UFC event?
We met working because your first UFC was 70, right? Bisping, Manchester.
Yeah.
And that was remember the story said that was supposed to be mine.
Who was that, Bisping? Was that?
It was when Bisping came after it was Elvis Sinisic.
Oh, yeah.
So it was when Michael won the Ultimate Fighter.
Yeah, that was his first fight in the UK.
And it was his first fight in the UK. Mm. And it was UFC 70. And that was how long I was supposed to be working. But I think I told the story before was I was still competing at the time. And it became, and then they just called me before it and said, look, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then I went one way, I done another. And then it didn't happen for me at that time. And then when we first started working together, because my first UFC was UFC 89, 2008. Mm, so it's the 13th debut. Year. Yes, Akihiro Gano.
Yeah.
And it was weird because I thought it was like the tradition was going to carry on. I thought I'm bound to be doing Dan.
Yeah.
But I didn't. And then when I met Bob, and of course he started, and obviously from boxing, we knew a lot of mutual people.
Mm.
But then when I heard him talk, I was like, where are you from? He's like, up the road, AI. And then it just went from there. And then he's just, Bob's at legend status as far as Kathmandu.
You work most events now then, do you?
Well, obviously till this time, yeah, it was a... Yeah, it was really well. It was really thriving, but is what it is in the time, mate.
Yeah. You do any other events other than UFC?
Yeah. We did quite a few together anyway, but yeah, I still do a few back at home and a few boxing events. And,
still do boxing as
well?
Yeah.
Yeah, just be quiet at the moment, but is what it is.
Yeah. What was I going to ask? I had a question then, and it's gone out of my head. So... Who did you get the call from then to start working UFC?
All came through Dave Lewis. Actually,
boxing, right.
So he started around about the same time, and I think he was looking to build the team at the time, and it was just for raps really. So yeah, so I haven't got a clue what it was.
No one else is available, so they couldn't.
I think I was about 963 on that list.
Tell me about the raps when you wrap in the hands. I'm interested to know how they're different to boxing. Because boxing, they're loading the knuckles a lot more, isn't it?
Yeah, because you've got to feel that glove.
Yeah.
So you've got the 8 and 10 ounce gloves to feel over 147, 10 stone 7. Your gloves go up to 10 ounce. So you've got more padding anyway. You've got bigger wrist, more strength in your wrist.
Yeah.
So everything's just reduced to slimline, really.
Yeah.
But you still got to keep the strength.
Yeah. So what are you doing? Because you can't tape over the knuckles, can you?
No. Just onto the straight line.
Right. So you just travelled for every event now together?
Pretty well most, don't we, really?
What kind of cakes do you get off his missus? What do you recommend when I show up at his house asking for cakes?
Do you know what? I had lemon sponge with chicken fillets in it.
What?
Lemon sponge with chicken, because that was my favourite. Beautiful. I've just kept my earpiece.
Keep your mouth.
Oh, mate, the cakes, the lemon drizzle, Dan.
He's kicked his stunt double.
Hang on. Lemon cake with chicken fillets.
Well, he shows me that many pictures of his chicken Sunday dinners. I think he has it all together on one big plate.
My missus Sunday dinner. It's like...
It's legendary.
It's legendary.
Yeah.
Roasters and stuff. And then she makes cakes. And then, obviously, when I first met Bob, and you know, like judges and stuff, like when you know someone's good at what they do. So then I start pulling him into MMA, and he's just started travelling everywhere with me. And because of where he generally, like, obviously would travel together, so he would come over or he would drive and pick me up, and then it just kind of snowballed from there. Then, like I said, he just used to turn up like a cat.
My dinner would be waiting, Dan.
She'd be arranging dinner and making cakes for him.
I even turned up a Sunday dinner when there was no shows.
But we've been literally round the world and back twice. And with Bob, obviously, there was an even spookier connection because my father-in-law, sadly, we lost this year, and... he was a fireman, and Bob was a fireman. What, neck and neck? Not in the same station, but there was a lot of overlap between firemen. And he was like the generation before Bob, but when they first got together. So I'm like telling him about Bob. My father-in-law, he was ex-household cavalry, ex-military, fire station, you know, officer, blah, 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 blah. And he's a Cockney, you know, he was an elder gentleman, very well-to-do. And he was like, you know what I mean, just setting his ways. And like, you know, we had a great relationship. And anyway, so I was all saying to him about Bob, blah, blah, fire service, and we talk about people. And then I finally got them together at the house. But Bob in his own, like, inevitable style. So my father, he was called John. So Bob meets him for the first time. And Bob's the ultimate icebreaker. He's like, how you doing, son? Yeah. John there's like, oh, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I said to the missus, she goes in there in the kitchen to make a cup of tea. And like 2 minutes later, they're talking about, you know, they're down memory lane about fire service, blah, blah. And all I can hear from the living room is, yeah, blah, 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 blah. I know what I mean, Johnny boy.
Yeah. Best mates,
yeah, like, and then 2 minutes later, and it's you know what I mean, Johnny boy. But that's amazing. Bob would get me out of a hostage situation.
Well, you said this before, you were telling me a story about where were you, Azerbaijan?
No, we was in Russia. So, like I said, like when the shows contact me and I put the like, he's, you know, he's number one on the list, which I'm too far in that I can't go back. And so we was working for Fight Nights, and obviously it's a Russian promotion, you know, a lot of Russian fighters, a lot of Chechen, Dagestani fighters.
Mm.
And like I said, Bob will get us out of a hostage situation. So I took him over and I've opened the door to this changing room, and it was like full of, there was a few Dagestani fighters on the card, so their corners and camps were there. And obviously, you know, it's a different mentality. Mm. Quite, they knew who I was, and they recognised Bob from, like, obviously UFC.
Mm.
So I opened the door, and it's like, it's not hostile, but it's quiet, yeah. Shall we say. You know, yeah, a lot of serious faces, yeah, in the, yeah, room. So I just fucking get in, shut the door, and I go down there. And like I said, I was saying that, obviously, they don't speak a word of English, neither does Bob. he ain't speaking Russian. So I go down the corridor, and then I'm coming back, and all I can hear is all this like roars of laughter from the room. So I open the door back up, and all they got, I'm not joking, mate. It was like, you know the scene, have you saw Stir Crazy?
No.
Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder, they get sentenced to life imprisonment.
Right.
And they get put in the prison cell with Grossberger. He's like the mass murderer. And all the guards are like, ah, oh, you're fucked now. And then they go and they come back and they're all sitting laughing and playing cards together. It's kind of like that. So I hear all this laughter and I open the room and they're all like, ah, they've got their arms round him again. He's crazy. But Bob's got the international language of, as he's wrapping hands, he'll look up and go,
The code breaker.
He'll just look up and wink. And that was like his communication tool.
Yeah.
And he's done it everywhere we've gone.
Brilliant. Did you travel much before MMA? Did you travel with boxing?
Yeah, quite a bit, Danny. Yeah, really. Yeah, we had a good career, really, boxing career. So, yeah, out in a few jobs in Mexico, South Africa, to LA. I went to Freddie Roach's gym.
Oh, I love Freddie Roach's.
Got two free lads on the undercard of Ricky Hatton,
yeah,
in Vegas. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, yeah, there's some pretty good lads, really.
So you've been around combat sports for a while. You boxed yourself?
Just a few amateur, Dan, but nothing. Maybe a total year's gym. Over 40 now, really, yeah. With amateur as well.
Wow.
Yeah, great, strong amateur gym, Dan, you know, good grounding, great background, mate. And we took most of the lads with us. When we went pro for our licence, we took most of the lads turned over then, so we started with a really strong stable.
Yeah. What got you into boxing initially?
Do you know what, Dan?
Or you just...
Truth, I never wanted to fight, box nothing, just get hit.
Is that right?
Just so in it, because I was going to get to, I was applying then, started applying for the fire brigade, and it took me out of foot on it to get fit. So I just started going to the gym.
And that's
and believe it or not, then I was like a rattlesnake. Not now. I was like ribs. You love it, don't you, sir? You love it, ribs.
It's quite haunting, actually.
Yeah.
See, the fans know it because it pops up on the podcast and stuff, and they hear them in the background. So it's...
on the beach today, I could hear you two on the raft and I could hear you laugh, and it was like, mate, it was unbelievable. It was really funny. Yeah, it was great. Great day.
Now he's cutting a little mark for himself, though, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. With
his questions.
Yeah.
Growing in confidence by the day.
Have you listened to that interview from yesterday?
Oh, you were talking about Clark? No, I was asking him about it today, but what I was saying is, like, when I first heard him starting the questions, you know, he was a little bit meek, a little bit, he was like, and now he's like, settled into and then he settled into his groove and he's taken off. He's doing really good.
Oh, it was great.
And then you've got the who shall not speak.
Yeah.
It's like you've got two total contrasts. There's actually two raptors, not just one. But we were talking today. I said that because you got James and Jamie. I said that Jamie, he's going to live to his like 150 because his heart don't go over fucking 20 beats a minute. Absolutely no way. You don't know if he's angry, sad. I think it's great.
Yeah, it's the same line I said.
I would. That's a good quality, man. Yeah. That's a good quality. What are you trying to do?
I'll tell you what, though. His interview with Mark Montoya, he's got a couple more coming out. Dan Kelly and Sam Greco coming up, aren't they?
You did?
Yeah, you were
speaking? I've got to see this, man.
I'm
proud of you, bro.
Mate, you're being impressed. This is a different kind of interview.
So after I first saw you interviewing, this was me contacting you?
Yeah, correct. So this came out the blue in Media Day.
Fucking check you out, Real Raptors MMA, with the questions. Oh, I just want to ask. Fucking hell!
I was working.
Class.
I was working on my laptop and I just heard this little like, and I was like, I know that voice. And then I looked and there he was.
You do scare the shit out of him with your voice notes, though.
Huh?
Like, you sent him one of these today, you scared the shit out of him.
Yeah, but come on, man. I'll sit out. Huh?
There he goes.
Keep that one off.
Make him have it.
I just hope that, like, you know, obviously the Brits and stuff, like, the American audience, I hope they get it and understand. Because obviously, all joking aside, Bob's my man. And we're friends in and out the game. Mm. You know, it is a constant fuck about with us, innit? Obviously, not when we're travelling stuff. But in work, he knows not to come near me. Like in work, he knows what I'm like.
I've got the signs now.
Is he hard work to travel with? Is he,
yeah.
Well, hard work, what? Gets angry all the time.
It's just when you're tired, isn't it? When nobody moves out the way and nobody wants to give the seat up and his dinner ain't big enough and his wishes on here caught his fall.
That's a new, like in America, you know how they serve, like, a whiskey in America.
Yeah.
Well, they just fucking obliterate it with ice.
Oh, yeah.
So I've ordered, like, I can't remember where I was. I was in Vegas somewhere in the bar and I ordered a whiskey. So they've just, like, and they've put this whiskey in. He's come and sat it down. A glass of ice. It was like a fucking slush puppy. I was like, what is that? And he's like, you ordered it. And I went, yeah. I said, take it back. I said, put them in the red side. No, you ordered it. I went, I didn't order that. I ordered whiskey. I said, just one cube of ice. So we had this back and forth with this guy in a bar. Because I don't know whether that's how people, but you know, if I have a little, you know, digestive or a little nightcap, you want to taste what you're drinking.
Yeah.
I don't want a fucking whiskey slush puppy. It was like a snow cone. Yeah. I thought, what is that?
It's for all the teenagers in Vegas that are drinking. Yeah. That's what it is.
Oh, yeah, we've had some moments, haven't we?
Oh, mate, obviously.
The ice cream shop.
What's the bad?
Oh, you got it.
So you're going to have some stories that he's not told me because he's the one that's going to come off bad, so that's why I wanted to...
I never come off bad, bro.
Never comes off bad.
Let me explain this. So we went...
It's weird. I kept reading comments in the thing. Mark Goddard comes across as arrogant. It's very... Never come across bad.
Oh god, yeah.
You do love the comments, don't you?
Oh, the comments are brilliant, mate. But they've been good recently because they see.
Well, they see we're having a laugh.
It's the whole thing again. Without like, when I'm a referee mold, then they say like, oh, he's arrogant or this, that, and the other. I'm in character. You know what I mean? I'm like, I'm doing my, like, people say he's stern or restrict or that. Isn't that what I'm meant to do?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like nobody wants a strict ref, do they? till your fucking wind depends on it.
That's exactly.
And everybody it, yeah. wants to be your friend.
Yeah, that's it.
But anyway, it's all good. So yeah, we're in India. So I get the call to go and work for SFL. And I put the team together. Of course, Focko's coming with me. So we're in. Where were we? Was it you Delhi? It was Delhi, wasn't it? It was. It was Delhi.
Yeah.
And like I said, yeah, you know, these yeah. things are tracked. So we go. We're going to the public Wayne's at the shopping mall. So he said, like, let's go and get a coffee, son. So we're walking through it, and I said, I want some ice cream. So innocently walk into the ice cream parlour. So he has like a cup, two scoops. I have a cup of two scoops. So the bloke behind the counter's like fiddle faddling on his thing, and he goes, oh, such and such rupees. And I was like, oh, yeah. I said, hang on a minute. I said, how much is that? And he said, whatever it was. And I look up at the nothing like the prices on there, and I went, that's not what I said. I just ordered two scoops. he's eating. He's like, ah, oh fucking hell! The bloke's like going, blah blah. I said, how much is that in dollars? And like the bloke was like, proud as punch. He's gone, $30, and I've gone for two fucking ice creams. And I'm there, and he's like that. He stopped eating his ice cream. I said, listen, I'll tell you what, mate. I said, we got two choices here. One is, I either pay what I should pay, or I'll come behind the counter and I'll take fucking $30 of ice cream. And the bloke, when he, and Bob says, I can actually hear Bob behind me going,
where's my flake?
He was gone behind me.
Where's my flake?
But then unbeknownst to him, the promoter at the time, who was a guy called Daniel, he was walking past, and I've gone, Daniel, come here. I've got this ice cream in my hand. I'm about to lose it in this ice cream shop. And this bloke just there with like that, $30. And so Daniel come over, and this bloke doesn't know we're together. So they start talking in dialect, blah, 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 blah. And he's basically said to him, look, I'm trying to take the money. Can you fucking leave us alone? And then I can't remember what happened to me.
I basically
gave him an ultimatum. Smashed up shop.
$30
worth of ice cream.
30 scoops.
Or just take it back. But he'd already eaten half of it. But then the bloke, we were just laughing. It was actually our first foray into. I've been to India many times since.
Yeah.
And it's a great place. But I think they just had us as tourists.
Yeah.
30 ice cream for two scoops.
That's clever.
Class.
So talk to me about cuts in the corner, because it's something I've never really got into or understood. But the way you guys get stuff under control, when, and especially in MMA, when we see some pretty bad ones, can you think of a cut when you sit in octagon side, you can see your fight has been opened up and you've got to get in there and fix that?
Yeah. You know what, Dan? Not really, because you got to deal with it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's the smallest or the biggest, sometimes the biggest are easy to deal with anyway.
Yeah.
So it might look worse, but it doesn't really mean.
Where the worst place on the face of the cuts?
Well, it's, some are different as well. I've got thinner skin, some have got the little veins across, you know what I mean? Mm. It's into the eyelids, it's just different positions, but it. So
what are the tools in your corner? Obviously you've got grease, which is the standard thing.
Yeah, well, our main thing's the adrenaline and the swabs, isn't it?
Right. And that's
they've got the new stuff now, the quick aid as well. So it is a bit more scientific now than it used to be. It's a lot more clean, a lot more sterile. You know what I mean? We don't have the things in the ears anymore and in the mouth now. We have the gloves and the... And it's... But it's all about... It's been looking after the fighters, haven't we, Dan?
Yeah.
You know, that's the athletes. That's what it's all about, really, for us. That's... No one else matters, really. That's our job. We've got to give them... That's our time.
Yeah.
And it's... Well, no, it's not our time. It's their time. It's our time to look after them properly. So, yeah.
What's he having now?
What's the matter with him now?
Sorry, no.
What's the matter with him now, Dan?
No. Sorry. It's Bob, isn't it? Yeah, no. It's Bob.
So what I was trying to be serious with you then, Dan. And he's throwing me one, eh? So, you know what? I'm going to jab him into a coma. Tell him that. You know what? The orangutan, Clint Eastwood.
Clyde. No, it was
you mother needs
when he's like a Freudian slip, and he's going, "It's our time, mate." He's like, "Oh shit, no, it's the fighters." Because he was on this real spiel.
Was I?
Yeah, because it would
perfectly.
You know
mate.
What I mean? It's our time.
Going for we can edit it. We can tidy up.
No,
we'll make it
real. Hey,
Dan, don't listen to him or kill him.
You had me falling out of a chair, unedited.
I'm watching that one.
Kill nah, this is cool.
He's had it reinforced.
Yeah.
This is going to go like...
Did you see him break the chair last week? Did you see him break the chair last week?
Someone showed... Was you showing me that? Yeah, someone showed me the thing.
Yeah.
Where was that?
Well, that was in the other hotel. The and I was actually in that room last night, and it's still there just sitting there.
It's got to be here.
He does that, mate. He's a sneaky little fucker. Because obviously, one of the best things about Bob is all fat. He doesn't have like... Facebook or Twitter or so. I said I was going to make a profile for him, and he has what he calls WhatsApp. Zap zap. He said WhatsApp, and he'd always say to me, "I don't look at that shit. I don't look at that shit." Then he'll call me and he'll go, "Hey, did you see such and such? And who's matched with blah blah blah?" And I'm like, "Well, how did you find that out?" Somebody showed me.
Yeah, my mom showed me.
Snake man caught him with his iPad. I reckon he's got some secret profiles.
Do you follow the sport? Are you a fan of
not really, Dan.
No, you did this.
I'm independent.
Yeah. So what's your kit in the corner then? Because you've got your
wrist. Yeah, you know, do your swabs. Yeah. Just your usual towels, Vaseline, all your grease.
Yeah.
Adrenaline, ice. Enswell.
And when the doctor's coming in, because obviously if there's a bad cut in one of the rounds, the doctor's going to come in and check that between rounds as well. Oftentimes you'll see the cut man trying to fix the fighter up before the doctor gets in there to see, and like they'll cover the cut before so the doctor can't check it until the end of the minute.
Yeah.
Like, do you get that minute to work?
You know, I think a lot of them now, they understand that you've got that minute to work anyway, then so they'll stand back. And they'll kind of like wait for you to just make a move away anyway before they make a judgment.
Mm.
So that they will, 99%, they'll give you time to work properly.
It's where a good ref will come in as well. Because obviously I know, we know the value of a cutsman.
Yeah.
They haven't got a minute, mate. They got 45 seconds. They got 45 seconds if they're lucky. If they're quick in, he's getting on a bit, but he's still getting in there. But they haven't got long. And the last thing, when you see a congested corner, you might have two corners. You might have a doctor, a cut man, the camera. You got me. It could be six people. And I always, if a doctor comes in, I'll always hold the, because the protocol is, say, doctor, let the cut man do his job. We'll clear everybody out and we can call time and let you do an inspection. That's fair on him. It's fair on the doctor. And most of all, it's fair on the fighter, because you know them guys have got a critical job, a critical job. About it is the difference of I may keep you in the fight or I may not.
Yeah.
So it's my job to keep control of that, or a good referee to try and facilitate, keep as many people out of the way as possible, let the cutman have his full 40 seconds or however long it takes to get in and out, then we can bring the doctor in to do, he's the last person, because ultimately it's between me and him then.
Yeah.
If he gives his opinion and the dialogue, is this fight going to go on? But when I see corners like a clusterfuck and the doctor's in there and the cutman's getting pushed out of the way, the coach is trying to give his, you know, championship winning advice. Why are you laughing?
I've just remembered something from the last weekend. There was a cutman on the way into the octagon, and Mark Montoya was on his way into the fighter, and the cutman like kind of shoved him out of the way to get into the octagon before him. And as he was coming in, Mark Montoya's got the mic on, and he said, "Don't push me out the way, motherfucker." It just popped into my head. Yeah.
We'll say who it was off camera.
Yeah.
It weren't him, was it?
No.
But honestly, it's like, the cutman, their role is vital.
Yeah.
And this is the thing, mate. We said, Bob knows, I'm like, I saw, you know, the referees are on show, right? The fighters are on show. The cutman effectively can be on show, but... You know, it's a craft.
Mm.
You know, this guy's been around for 40 years.
Yeah.
And you can't buy that experience, can you?
Is that self-taught? You had to learn all that yourself?
Yeah. Yeah, it is done, yeah.
So when stuff changes, when you get new equipment in the corner, how do you learn about that? Is that all on you to learn about?
The basic stuff's still always the same. So you still, adrenaline's been around forever with the quick wide, which is natural.
Right.
So it's just a progression, really. But it's the science now, right? There's more and more things, there's...
So what does adrenaline do?
It's a coagulant.
Right. So it just clots the blood. Right. Okay. Okay. Because I've
and then it's cut once. Oh, no, yeah.
Only once. Mm-hmm. Got a little scar here. Three stitches, well, five stitches total.
Was he?
Yeah. And that was the inside. That was the inside seam of a glove. Yeah. See, what I've noticed, because I watched it, in fact, there's a good boxing match coming this weekend, isn't there? Lopez and
Lomachenko.
Yeah.
I'm going to have it on my phone while the fights are going on. Yeah. Boxing seems to, they get a lot more swelling before they
You better tell them you were joking about that.
What?
Imagine the comments. He's watching boxing, he's on there. You better tell him you're joking.
No, the UFC will be over by the time that starts. Boxing tends to swell more, right? Because the bigger gloves.
Yeah. Yeah, plus they're taking a lot more punishment.
Yeah.
And I think the difference with MMA as well to boxing, really, Dan, because they're not so used to so many cuts as MMA, it's like they're kind of like the referees are always a little bit wary.
Yeah.
So then, like, here, you just let you do your job, let you crack on.
Yeah, yeah.
There, it's kind of like, oh, let me have a look on it. You know what I mean? And it's like a little bit slightly different, really. Yeah. We get more freedom here to work properly.
Uh-huh. When you see a fighter, do you look at them and you look at where the scar tissue is and you're like, they're going to open up again if they get caught?
You can tell sometimes, yeah. You can kind of work it out a little bit, but it's all right, mate. We can stop it as well, can't we?
Yeah. What about them surgeries? Have you seen them? I think Nick Diaz one of them surgeries.
Marcus Davis
had one.
Vandalay he looked totally different.
He does look different.
They shaved the...
That's what Atanadi.
The skull brow, don't you?
Yeah. Atanadi's eyebrows showed back down.
How did they do that?
Because his eyes were...
Peel your face back, don't they?
Yeah, he went for the operation. Then they just shave it and then stitch it back together.
Oh, they take it from your hairline,
right?
Peel you down and then make it more... Why are you laughing?
I'm not laughing.
Make a hairline like plastic surgery.
Yeah.
They'll make a hairline incision where it's hidden, pull it down, and where the sharp angular bone is, they'll just file it off and make it round.
Because you get calcifications, don't you, on the bone where if somebody's been hit a lot, especially boxers, you tend to find that kind of real defined brow and cheekbones. Like that's a calcification from impacts, though, right?
Look at an old picture of Vandalay, and they're totally different.
Mate, when he first got it done, he looked like he was elvish, like off Lord of the Rings. Like they tightened all his face up and everything.
Yeah,
because initially he was like a heavy forehead, heavy brow bone.
Yeah,
because of all the scar tissue he had, flat nose.
Yeah,
and he went in for the surgery, and he came out looking real surprised. I remember seeing him in Vegas. Because he used to have a gym across the road from the Strip, didn't he? On the other side of the 15. Vandalay used to have a gym there.
Yeah.
And I was there doing a photo shoot one day. It was one of the weirdest things I've ever seen. I love Vandalay. Always been a fan of him. He pulled up in Aston Martin Vantage with a picture of him on the side. And it was the old picture of Vandalay where he looked like an animal. And he's like that.
The axe murderer.
Yeah. He's like screaming like that. Flecked veins and shit all over the place. Door opens and he gets out. He's got a pork pie hat on and a chihuahua under his arm and a big smile on his face. I'm like, that's no way is that the same person.
Is that the same guy?
Yeah. Have you worked on someone that's had that done before then?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. A few in boxing, really, but it's kind of like it's a long spell from the game, really, to get it done and repaired and back in. So,
does it make a difference?
Yeah.
It does. So they shave the bone down so it's not
Because it's quite sharp, you know, then. Yeah.
I'm lucky. Don't forget,
on it in the fight as well, it's sparring, it's the weeks before, it's the months, the days, the years, the weeks.
Yeah.
So it's just constantly ticking up pound, isn't it?
So you're in the gym working with guys when they're sparring as well?
We used to be in the gym, constant, every night. That was our life. So, day in, day out.
It's not MMA though, is it, Bob?
Not in MMA. Like a boxing thing. MMA, I can just turn up and do what I do. And that's me doing.
Tell me my favourite story, my favourite Bob story.
What's that?
About the other cut man, because you said you were going to jab him into a coma. It's one of my favourite stories.
Bob's story Chronicles part 3. there's there's another cut man. We're in Russia, so we're all at the bar. We're all sitting down having a drink. Me, Bob, and Ben Cartledge and David Leatherby, a few other officials were there, and we're just chilling out. And I was, with doing what Brits do, start taking the piss. Was talking about him and another cop, and I was like, shut up, Bar. I said, he'll do you. And he's like, he fucking won't. He won't. I'll do this. I'll just clean him out. And then I said, but he knows jiu-jitsu. I said, he knows jiu-jitsu. I said, what are you going to do if he takes you back? He's got his drink and he's gone. Put his drink down. He goes, takes me back where? Mate, the whole table has just erupted, and he's just there with his drink going on. Like we're the idiots. He goes, what's he on about? Takes me where? You know what I mean?
I love it.
Mr. Knowledge.
What are the highlights of your career? Can you think of certain points when you were like, God,
you know what, Dan? Nah, not really, because I'm happy with a debut, an amateur, a top profit. I'm as happy with anyone I rank. There's no barrier, mate.
Yeah.
Nah, I'll just look. And I'm going to give you a story this week, and this is like moments for me, but you know Impa, the kid who got...
Yeah.
So I was just wrapping his hands this week, nice, relaxing. What a lovely kid. He introduced me to his dad. He says, do you mind if I put the music on? I says, mate, this is your room. You do what you want to do. And he's got like this gospel music on that he was singing through the church, and his dad was there. And you know what, mate? It's just priceless.
Yeah.
It's priceless, mate.
Because they're the moments that nobody else gets to see. Really. You get to share them with the fighters in a real intense moment right before they walk.
Because it's all about them, isn't it? This is their moment. This is
their time. I tweeted about that kid.
Yeah. What?
I tweeted about that kid.
About Impa.
Impa, yeah.
Yeah.
What a lovely bloke, you know. Yeah. Real amazing character.
I don't care you've got to talk about fighters in there. Fuck off. I was talking about the fact that you would, the kid, you know, in a non-condescending way. Honestly, what a lovely human being.
Yeah, and a pleasure to work with him.
Yeah, I think his father's a pastor or a preacher or whatever.
Well, I kind of like put that together from the music, because he was singing to me at first. And I thought, that's all right, that is. And he says, yeah, it's my church music.
He came out to have got a gospel.
And then, and he put his Alexa up and... he says, do you mind if I play this? I says, you do what you want, mate. This is your room.
Yeah.
It was beautiful, mate.
Is it difficult when, obviously, because that fight didn't end his way, is it difficult when you make that connection with those fighters in that moment and then you see...
I knew you was going to ask me that then.
Well, it's interesting, because it's interesting.
And yet it is.
Yeah.
I know, yeah. You'd be lying if you said it didn't affect you, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Like, so, do you feel a part of that corner team when you're there? Or do you try and stay separate from
them? Well, like, it's a little bit different for us here because we're having to wrap away from the arena. Mm. So, like, once he's gone, really, that's my job done with him, really. Right. Unless, you know what I mean, on a normal show, we can be there. But so once I'd wrapped his hand and got ready, he was transported and that was my finish with him then. Mm. But, Dan, that's one of a million stories, mate. There's some amazing characters out there, you know, that he's himself. It's...
What about the IMAF, Bob? We love with
it. Oh, mate, the IMAF. Well, that's the thing now, because the sport's developing that good, the science is coming, the levels are just going amazing. And I tell you, we meet the best kids in the world, don't we, mate? IMAF. We do. They're smiling from the coming, smiling through the tournament, they're smiling all the way after. It's just amazing, mate. Yeah. Amazing. Amazing concept. Amazing for the sport, really. It's a great push.
Last year's Worlds, mate. 500 odd athletes.
Incredible.
Is this when these boys were there as well?
No, they were in Rome. But Rome was huge too.
Right.
Rome was the European. But we had the World Championships in Bahrain, obviously.
Yeah.
I put it on Bob years ago. I had to get him involved in IMAF to start sorting them out and the cut men. So I dragged him in there and everybody loves him there. And
it's an amazing place, though. It's a great place, though. Great tournament.
But the kids, mate, honestly.
Yeah.
Like when we had the youth tournament. So we have the junior seniors, which is 18 to 21, 21 plus seniors. Mm-hmm. But then last year we've done the first ever IMAF youth tournament, where we have restricted rules, no headshots, etc. 12, 13, 14, 15, 15, 16.
Mm.
Three times I had to walk out the room.
Really?
Starry, you know, teary-eyed.
Yeah.
It's honestly, it's amazing. It's amazing what they... It's the same place where we were in June. We went back in August, and you said they come out, they call you sir.
Yeah, and it's just like, you know, and you see the kids like year on year, it's just the level. Like,
you watch them develop.
It's the ability. It's just like, it's just amazing. Eh? I dread to think how good it's going to be in another few years, because it is. It's just like mind blowing.
It's so fulfilling.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I say about IMAF. Yeah. I'd never, like, my involvement in working with them, it's amazing working on massive fights and the big stars and the title and Vegas and stadiums and world titles. Amazing.
Mm.
What a privilege. but it's the same privilege when you're working with these kids.
Yeah.
And like I said, getting emotionally invested, and when you watch the level of them, because it's their World Cup to them.
Mm.
I remember like last year at the Worlds, there was a thing in, there was a fighter from Beirut, and it was a semi-final match with a Russian. And what happened is he had him in a guillotine, the Russian tapped, but the ref didn't see it, and the fight went on. So we have in IMAF, because it's a tournament format, there's an appeals process, and obviously it has to be something like an egregious foul or something you didn't see. So I get, it's like when he sees, you don't see me for a week, nah, do you? IMAF, no. Mate, I want to change my fucking name. I love it, it's the best thing ever, but I'm telling you, man, I've never more exhausted at the end of a week, because everybody's like chasing after me. Mark, protest, what's happened? We don't agree with the judges. That's not a fucking protest. You can't do that. You know what I mean? So we have to check them. 5 minutes later, Mark, protest. What happened? We don't agree with the judges. I'm like, listen, what? Anyway, but then was like, this thing was like a foul. This thing was, the match was over, obviously. Yeah. The ref didn't see it. So they came to me, they pay like a process fee, like a proper written, you know, protocol. And then I go and watch the footage, clear as day, the kid taps. So I bring the Russian coach and the fighter back in. I showed him that Russian coach straight away, shook my hand, clear as day there. Then I go and get the kid and I tell him he's back in the tournament, and he bursts into tears, mate. And then I'm like that. So, mate, because I've been, you know what I mean? Yeah. We know what the sport is.
Yeah.
And this is their World Cup, and I'm saying, this is this kid's dream. And I'm saying, and he's looking at me, he's put his head on me, he's crying. And I'm like, my eyes are there, and I'm like, get him away. You know what I mean? But it just, honestly, mate, you can't put into words how fulfilling it is watching the IMAF tournaments. It's one of the best things I've ever got involved with in this sport.
Yeah. It's good to see some of those guys starting to get to the pro ranks now as well. We've had a few crossover to the UFC recently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One FC, Bellator.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, you see a lot of them at the shows as well. Like, to look, developing. Mm. And, yeah. It's amazing.
And he does the same. Obviously, I was doing the talk today, the technical seminar for IMAF, because it's as much as it's for the development and experience of the athletes, it's the same for me bringing on the officials. He'll do the same bringing on the cut men.
Mm.
Look at you might have seen him here this week, Angelo, the little guy with the coloured glasses, the Italian new cut men.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is his first call up to UFC. He's put in all the graft, years of work, years of tournament, da 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 da. He's from a Thai boxing background, so he's got all the experience. And then they're learning under Bob.
Mm.
And then we're bringing them on and into the fold as well. They've served their apprenticeship the right way, and they're coming through.
Yeah,
I'm off all the way.
Yeah,
love it.
So you're training guys up as well now at the same time.
Yeah, we spoke about it quite a bit, I bet, and it's just a steady progression. Yeah. It's all about, it's just a learning process all the way through. Never stop studying and learning, do you, with this game?
Yeah.
That's all I need to do. That is put some back to them now. Really, that's my that's my aim now.
Yeah,
just give it back to them.
It's different with boxing, because obviously you do you travel with your fighters in boxing? Because I always remember Stitch used to get a call up to go and work. Klitschko. You bring your own cut man, right?
Yeah.
So as that, because it's different in MMA.
Through our gym, I used to take care of our own anyway, I never farmed ours out to anyone else, never. Mm. But other people, obviously, they aren't, I don't know, maybe inexperienced coaches now in boxing, but we try to kind of like pick a quarter bit up there, really.
Yeah.
So wraps, cuts, I think they're starting to transgress a little bit more into this model.
Right.
So it's kind of like, we'll train them, and when we get there, can somebody wrap their hands and somebody do the quids? There is a lot still to do their own, but if you've got a few lads on your show, it's bump, 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 bump. So they kind of need to get someone settled in with them, really.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But like with boxing, obviously, you get to follow the amateurs through to the pro ranks and watch them develop a lot more. Yeah. Like with IMAX, you kind of see them at the tournament.
Yeah, just the same concept.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing, mate.
It must make it more difficult, though, when you know the fighters personally and they're from your gym. Do you not think? I mean,
in the boxing,
yeah.
Yeah, it was, Dan, but my view was that I was going to take care of my kid anyway.
Yeah.
So I can, if you ain't right, I've got the chance to call that.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like I always, yeah, 9 times out of 10, it was my decision which way we were going to give her the boxing. And
right.
I don't really like to trust them anywhere else.
Yeah. So in boxing, you'd pull a fighter out if you thought they'd have been adding.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah.
But not in MMA, you can't.
Well, that's not.
You don't. Do you give any feedback to the doctor? Do you upset the doctor's, mate?
No, I'll never have a row with the doctors, mate. Yeah. No, it's up to them now. I can only do what I do, Dan, and then it's. They'll make the call along with the referee, so no.
What about the old broken nose thing when people blow their nose and blows their eyes up? How often do you see that?
Do you know what, Dan? Not really that much. As much as I thought, really, because like when I come into the sport, I thought, I think this might be the main kind of injury, really, but it's that varied, you know what I mean? Like, they get cuts on their legs, they get their legs swelling, they got, it's anywhere.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's way, way, way different.
Yeah.
Way different.
That's different to boxing as well, isn't it? Because in boxing, you're dealing with the face in just boxing all the time. Yeah. Whereas in, so do you let the corner teams deal with ice in the legs and that kind of stuff?
Well, there's only so much we can do, so we will try and fix it at, you know, as a cookman, we've got to look at whatever we can do. So, but that's a good corner. And they'll let you do your work, and if I can like still give them space as well, because I understand they got a massive important job, because they want to talk to their kid, they want to be in there, you know. So I'll try and give them space to where I try not to interfere with the good corner, really. Just let them work away, and I'll just, halfway they don't really know I'm there, I'll just do my bits and move away, and on we go.
Yeah.
Next round.
Yeah. So you've been around the world then, you boys have.
Many times.
And many places left is the sun.
Is there anywhere you haven't been where you'd like to go?
Countries?
Yeah.
UK.
there's a ton of countries.
What are you laughing at, Ridge?
there's a ton of countries I'd like to go. Like, you know, South American stuff, but obviously, I work a lot in the States as well. Bob doesn't, unfortunately, because there's a ton of cutmen there and stuff. But like, we have literally been at like the four corners, you know. Like when we, like I said, there's that many stories, so many stories like of just mad stuff that just goes on when we're on the trips. Mm-hmm. Like, and we're like when we go to New Zealand or China, wherever, and I'm like 3 a.m. like jet, and I'm like, he awakes him. He's like, here he goes, should we get a coffee? I can hear him. We're in some hotel in China. I can't remember what it was. And I was like, are we going to get a coffee? And I could actually hear him going, through the wall. I was like, oh, fucking hell. He was in the next room. And I was just like knocking on the wall going.
Prisoner cell blockade. Let's just
go and get out.
Yeah, we've got this code for the coffee out on the wall.
And we just go out and walk and go out everywhere. Yeah. But it's like, I've got a scrapbook full of pictures of me and him and in loads of places. Like, it's mad, like a mental, you know what I mean? All these countries all over the world. It will make for a good scrapbook one day.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, I need to get some of the stories of what's happened.
We forget a lot as well.
We need to get them documented.
Yeah. Did you travel much before you, like outside of work? Outside of being a cut man, are you a traveller anyway?
Just normal holidays, really. Just me and the wife.
Loves his holidays, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's holidays.
Where to?
Yeah, anywhere, mate.
Yeah.
Europe. Don't lie, Bob. Tell anywhere. Them where you go.
Into Europe.
Anywhere, really. We'll just make a decision, and we like the Christmas. We like the Christmas away, you know what I mean?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Sunshine,
Christmas away.
Yeah, I think you're just sticking around for Christmas dinner, oh God, I'd say.
Well, I think that's next on the list, you don't know.
Expertly avoiding that. You're telling me you work hard, mate. He works his balls off.
Yeah.
Same thing, we work hard. He loves the Caribbean.
Right.
Loves his 2 weeks. He loves an all inclusive. Loves his all inclusive.
Oh, this is working.
Oh, yeah, my Bacardi and Coke.
See, you thought that. I'll tell you another story we've gone on now.
We got to lead him into those, ain't we, Dan?
We're coming back from the Middle East. We worked on this promotion. It wasn't the UFC. And because obviously flying all the time, and you get status with the airlines. So we've got a gold card with Emirates. So we've gone into the lounge and blah, 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 blah. And they bumped us up. Like, they looked after us. They looked after me. So I sweet-talked them at the check-in. He's with me. So he'd go in, he's dressed like he's a fucking painter and decorator. I'm like, whatever. So we're in the lounge. And we've gone up to the the Emirates is class,
yeah,
business in Emirates. So we've gone upstairs. He's talking about, I've gone to get in my seat, and I'm thinking, I know he's behind me, but I've seen him go down the other aisle. So as I'm getting my stuff out of the seat, and the air host there, and they're all meeting you personally, showing you in your seat, da 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 da. And I'm looking, and I could see this air hostess, and she's going, like looking over those. So I look over. He stood on the other side of the aisle with his bag, like just staring over me, just looking at us, me and the air hostess, and I'm looking at him, I'm like, fucking please God, no. I'm like, just keep walking, Bob, just keep walking. And he's looking over at me, he's trying to get the attention of the air hostess. And then just, I think she was foreign anyway, she probably wouldn't have a clue what he's saying. And I'm just there, like, trying to be, like, welcome, Mr. Goddard, blah, 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 blah. He's there with his rucksack on. He's painting and decorating. And he's going, he's a clown, he is. He's a clown. The girl's like, she's just looking at me and going, and I've gone, I don't even know who that is. And I'm looking at him, I'm going, fucking get to your seat. And he's going, he's a clown. Tell him to sit down, he's a clown. The woman, the air hostess.
Yeah, you couldn't rewrite it, could you?
She's just looking at me going like, is he okay? I went, I don't know him. I don't know.
Just disowned
him. Yeah, you couldn't rewrite it, could you?
Do you ever have any trouble travelling with stuff? Because obviously travel restrictions and stuff at the moment.
Yeah, I went through, caught a bit of a spell with the Caesars and things at the
yeah.
At the airport, but obviously they've made a few, they've made it a lot easier now for us to, just to travel, with a smaller pair of scissors or, yeah. So they will make an allowance now, really. We did it one time, and adrenaline, we used to have a nightmare with it. But it's all good now, really.
Yeah.
Is
it, adrenaline's a powder, isn't it? It comes in powder.
No,
liquid. It's liquid, is it? Yeah. Right, okay, because that's the problem.
Yeah, so it's, So as long as you've got the small bottles,
right.
You can travel it through.
Do you have to use much of it in a corner?
No, not really, no. Oh. No, it's
The thing is, because of all the years I've been in around combat sports, I've just never had a problem with cuts. I used to swell up pretty good. I used to get good bruises and good swelling, but my skin's like a rhino. It just doesn't.
Oh, that's the thing, see, as well. And look, what a lot forget as well, when you're stripping white bad, Dan, your skin becomes thinner, right. So you're more susceptible. So if you aren't properly rehydrated, you'll get more cuts anyway. Mm. So because your skin will start to tear a little bit more, and it'll be easier. So it's like, really, you should be feeding it while you're stripping weight.
It's weird because it's the thing is the cut man. It's like an area of combat sports that I just don't know much about.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I've never had many interactions with them. I mean, like the end swell, I always used to hate that in Thai boxing. Get cracked with a knee or an elbow, and you get a big swelling, and then you cut. But my corner man used to do it.
Yeah.
And you come in with the end swell and a bucket of ice.
And that's the thing, if you're having a bit of a tear up, Dan, the last thing you want is somebody messing with your face.
Horrible.
I'm thinking they must really hate me at this minute in time. They must really. I wish you'd get out of my way.
You do see it though, don't you? Like sometimes when the cut lands on the nostrils, get away.
Worst feeling in the world, didn't it?
Sorry.
You can't breathe.
Yeah.
Your fucking nose is over here. You got there. You got him. All right, son. Yeah. You know what I mean? But they got the job.
But that's the thing, Dan, of us like wrapping hands. That's like kind of the thing of gaining the trust.
Right.
So do you know if you can just break that ice a little bit, then maybe them think he knows what he's got to do, really.
Yeah.
They know we're in there for him anyway, mate. It's that's our sole job, mate.
Yeah. And the thing is, a lot of fighters, they get used to getting cut. I hear in corners a lot is, like, when someone sits down, the corner man will reassure them that it's not a bad cut.
Yeah.
If somebody gets cut a lot, they're like, don't worry, you're fine, it's just a nick or whatever. I remember I cut Marcus Davis, and I mean, it was a pretty bad cut, that was. But his corner man
I left it.
Yeah.
Had to stop for an inspection.
Did. Lovely rollover elbow.
Put you back in the same place.
You did. Not in the Danny Rushton one, though. I'll never forget that one.
Pray tell. That?
Danny Rushton.
Yeah, what happened? Right?
Dropped him with a jab.
Yes.
Cut him open in his forehead.
Yeah.
And as he cut open, I didn't drop him with a jab, sorry. That was a bit later in the fight. I hit him with a left hook and cut him.
Yeah.
And then stepped in, took him down outside reap, landed in his guard. Mm-hmm. And as soon as we landed...
Yeah.
You stop the fight, check the cut.
Yeah.
And then restart the standing.
Absolute bollocks. film or it didn't happen.
I've got it out.
That's the only thing that you've ever got in this.
Yeah, that's it. I can't complain. You've refereed me, what, 14, 15 times? Yeah. I'm going to go through and have a look because I think it is 14 times. And what, Marcus Davis was the last one?
No, Mir Sadala.
Did you referee me for Sadala?
I did, and that's cool when you don't even remember.
Yeah, the thing is, I don't. I oftentimes don't. I remember Dan Mergliotta refereed my UFC debut.
Okay, here we go. No,
yeah, because I remember right at the end of the fight, the bell went, and Gono was mid-air throwing a knee.
He caught him.
And Mergliotta just
bodied him into the fence.
That was wicked. Yeah.
I refed you twice in the UFC. Marcus Davis and Amir Sadala, which is in Nottingham.
Yeah. And I've never lost with you refereeing.
Never. Well, imagine the comments.
I know.
Fucking fix. They're friends. Look into it, man. Look into it.
But the thing is, we weren't until I'd stopped fighting anyway.
Of course.
We knew each other, but you always keep a good distance. It's worth noting this, because obviously, like for a start, so this is a different hotel to the one that the fighters are in Fight Island. Commentators... and all the production staff are over in the W because we have all our meetings there. That's where the corner teams and the fighters are. Media and officials are in this hotel, which is a different one. So to intentionally keep you separate.
Because we're here for so long, it's absolutely brilliant. Mm. It's the right thing to do. Normally at a UFC, because we'll come in fairly, we're only there for 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
We share the same hotel. Yeah. It doesn't really matter, and your paths don't really cross. But because of here, it's actually, we much prefer it, don't we?
Yeah.
We're in a lovely hotel. Our own pools, balcony, everything's there for us. It's just better.
Yeah.
Because you're here for such a long time. Mm-hmm. On a regular event, when you don't spend a lot of time, the crossover period is only a couple of days.
Mm.
It's we're in the same hotel and it's normally pretty cool.
Yeah,
it's fine.
Yeah. So what do you do between events then? When all your downtime, what do you read crosswords? You look crossword guy for me.
I've been doing a bit of reading, just chilling out reading.
What are you reading?
I've got a couple of books. You want some?
I'm interested in what you read.
The Cat Stars.
Andy McNab at the minute. I've just finished Charles Bronson.
Right.
So yeah. Autobiographies, then,
You get bored. You get bored between the events.
I never read unless I come away.
Do you not?
Yeah,
right?
I get bored. Yeah, away. Yeah, yeah. Do it. Yeah.
What do you do when you're at home? Are you carpenter?
Working. Yeah. And cut me grass.
And send me pictures.
You know the Sunday dinners he sends me. Yeah. I send him a picture of my lawn with all the lines in. Then.
Send me pictures. Yeah.
Have you seen the one I know him after?
What did you say about the book you were reading?
Bronson. Charles Bronson.
Before that,
Andy McNab.
That's
there's one. There's one.
That goes fishing. That's
right. Yeah. I had to cut your lawn and feed it properly. there's a clip on somewhere from the IMAF, and I think I just got into my room and the patio door was broke. So I called down and the maintenance man popped up and he got his messing around with his tool. So I got his lead plugged in and got his drill, took the door out, yeah. And I drilled the lock out of my door, repaired it, put the new one in. And he was like, stood, what's going on here? Yeah.
What do you do? What's your job? You do a bit of everything.
I'm maintenance, a carpenter.
Nice.
So I do maintenance.
So what are the jobs? So you're fireman?
I was. Carpenter. I'm finished fireman, I retired.
Cut man.
Yeah, that's it.
What else? Gardener? Yeah, but is that amateur though? Is that?
Yeah, that's just for me. Then
you really. Never cut Goddard's lawn, then. No?
Oh, I'd do it.
You would. Yeah,
I'd put that a bit like a football pitch. Yeah.
You don't cut my lawn, mate.
No, you
I
don't.
I can't imagine you doing it.
I have a gardener.
Oh, you do? Yeah.
I do. Yeah.
Hello? Oh, could you?
I'm not. What do you mean you can't imagine? Oh, it's too big for a lawnmower. Donkey Kong and sit on a lawnmower.
Like Mario.
You can just imagine.
Bowser.
Him, cutting the lawn down and he ain't enjoying it. And the neighbour says, all right, Mark, he's gone, shut up.
He does get angry, doesn't he?
Yeah. Oh, here we go again.
Oh, what?
We've just managed to...
Mate, no. I've been angry all week this week. Have anyway.
He says him.
What?
I just checked the last podcast and I fucking said to him, right? He's talking about me.
Have you?
We'll break that ice. Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me about this makeup you're wearing anyway. did you
I've done him.
I look like what's his name from The Cure? What's his name? Yeah. Well, what happened was, you know, a careless fucking moron buried his fucking
a careless moron. I can just see a black beard there and nothing else.
We were on.
Oh, fair play. Get in there, Ribs. Oh,
stop.
Get in there, Ribs.
Stop. Yeah, we were on the beach at the apparatus, you know, like the pull up bars and stuff.
Yeah.
And it was like, mate, I swear to God, that eye poke, that would have been fight over.
That's it.
It was fucking no catastrophic. Contest. He stood there jumping up down the tyre, and went, oh, he's gone. Bam. Thumb, mate. It was. I felt it in the back of my head. He hurt me, man.
Good. It was bad.
But look at him. Yeah.
We don't look too bad.
I look like an 80s new romantic. Huh?
Yeah, it was bleeding too big for a new romantic.
Yeah, it was bleeding. Oh, here we go. Am I really that big?
Massive, yeah.
I know. He thinks he's great. Oh, look at Goddard.
That's why John Gooden don't want to train with you, because you'll snap him. Glass one, I'm telling you.
Yeah, well, no, don't start me off.
No, I'll bring him over. John, he doesn't want to train.
Don't be scared, mate.
Don't be scared, John.
I'll train with... He thinks I'm going to break him.
Yeah.
You are.
Have you never done any grappling? Never been interested?
No.
He did once. He had his grappling debut in Singapore. We were on the open mats. He's come across the mat. So I've like grabbed him, like roughing him up, going, ah, Bob. I've took him down. He's on the mat. He's turned around. His lips have gone purple. I was like, Bob! I was like, fuck, Bob, Bob, wake up!
Yeah. And then I've been tapping out 2 hours and 26 minutes.
I was like, Bob, what's happening?
Yeah.
He's got all blue in the mouth. I'm like, get up, like, you know, get some water. But he made it.
He made it.
Incredible, eh?
Too many stories, mate. We've got an absolute, but it's the best thing, Foldable. Mate. Like, we joke about, but you know, me and him are always together and always traveling. And it's just.
And look at this, look what we've got here.
Yeah.
This is amazing, mate. Imagine setting this up in normal times.
Yeah.
And they've done it in this. Yeah. It's the bollocks, mate.
Yeah. You've been.
We did Julo, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Did you do the Khabib Poirier fight as well? 2-5-2.
Yeah, we were here
for that.
Yeah.
That was different. I mean, we were in this hotel then.
Yeah.
I was staying here.
We were all here, weren't we?
Yeah.
But it was in the temporary structure.
A massive, massive building.
And then we stay because we work out with Debbie Warriors and that. Bob's here with me on them shows.
Yeah.
Even more stories.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, stayed over for that weekday.
Yeah. So what do you do? You get all your work from through Mark now?
No, we still do our own shows, but we do kind of get a lot of shows together now. We still do.
Boxing slowed right down though recently.
it's real struggling in the UK at the minute. It's a sign of the times, eh?
Yeah,
and I don't think they can replicate anything like this. They can have a little go, but they ain't got the support and the backing of that.
Mm.
This is just amazing, ain't this?
Yeah, it is amazing. Yeah. Did you ever watch much boxing? Were you a fan of boxing?
Yeah.
Who were you used to watch?
Oh, I was a big Duran fan.
Really? Yeah. Hands of stone.
Yeah.
He made a mess of a few people.
Oh yeah, it just come from nothing, eh? But funny enough, I watched the Johnny Tapia. We've been talking about it, the Johnny Tapia documentary and
The Vida Loca.
Oh, I see that.
Amazing.
You know Tapia, right?
Yeah.
Oh, his story. I read his book.
Yeah.
He's, if you watch the documentary, you'll read his life. What a life story.
Yeah,
he had.
Tough fight.
Incredible.
Mm.
Yeah.
Incredible story.
Well, there's some great characters around, isn't there?
Yeah.
You know, this sport, that sport. There's some great people around.
Yeah. So Duran, you were fabulous for them.
Do you know what, Dan? Really, all around that era was a great era for boxing anyway.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, you'll never get that time back.
Yeah.
I was the John Rafferty, because for us growing up, it was the super.
Ben and Eubank for me. That was
Eubank, Collins,
yeah,
Ben,
oh, yeah.
Later Calzaghe.
Yeah.
But that was the super era there.
Yeah.
Best
era in British boxing.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, Steve Collins.
It was Irish too, but that era, that super middleweight era.
Yeah.
And the middleweight.
Yeah.
In British boxing, you'll never replicate it.
Yeah.
Who's your best British boxers then, do you reckon? Who comes to mind?
For me?
Yeah.
My favourite boxer stylistically is Chris Eubank.
Yeah. Oh, what an uppercut. There are two people in the world that do one uppercut and I can't do it, and it's that slip off the centre line, come up the centre. Mm. And Eubank's one of them, the other one's Masato, who used to fight in K1.
Masato,
I could just never get that punch.
Watch Chris Eubank's footwork.
Yeah.
He was very wide. He'd cross a ring in 2.5 strides.
Mm. Yeah.
He'd be like, bum, bum, on you. Yeah. His footwork and his chin was second to none. He's probably my favourite British boxer.
Really, and his brain, and his brain as well.
Yeah.
The science in his brain.
What about yours, Bob?
You know what? I probably might agree with you there. Nigel Benn was always good for a tear-up, wasn't he? Yeah. He was always... It was one way or the other, so it was always going to be exciting, but... yeah, it's a great times, eh?
Yeah.
Great times, eh?
My favourite thing about Chris Eubank was how he used to... Well, first of all, he used to just command a ring. Like, walking out, getting in the ring, everything.
Psychologically.
But then there's one clear memory I've got of him, and he was wearing red shorts and red gloves, and he dropped his man with a body shot, and he walked into the corner, and instead of facing back into the ring, he just stared down the camera lens like that with his gloves stacked on top of one another. And you can see the bloke in the background crawling around trying to gasp for air. What a boxer, eh? What a boxer.
Do you think it ain't there anymore, is it, Danny? It's not.
Nah, not really. There's not the competition now, though, is there?
I don't
think
so.
The champs don't fight one another anymore.
No, I just...
I think heavyweight is.
Well, I mean, there's been a bit of resurgence in heavyweight, for sure. What do you think of Tyson Fury?
Oh, yeah.
He's been sparring with Aspinall, hasn't he? Tom Aspinall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He used to spar a lot of kickboxers as well.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, he used to train in the same gym that I used to do my pad sessions in. I would be in there wrapping my hands as Tyson Fury was finishing his pad session.
Yeah.
And he'd get out and then I'd use the...
What a character, like.
Oh, yeah. Fascinating individual.
Yeah.
Really and interesting.
The good thing is, you know, he's like that in real life. Like, that's just him.
Yeah.
That's just the way he is. And that's why everybody likes him, mate.
Yeah. Yeah. What about the Prince and the Sea end of the boxing spectrum? Did you enjoy them guys, the showboats?
Yeah. There's class act to them, mate.
Yeah.
All nice, good styles, their own styles, separate styles, but effective.
Yeah, that's it.
Ingles gym, and it's like that stylistic. Anybody that said they didn't enjoy watching Nazim, and come on, it's just a shame that after when he lost to Barrera,
he just couldn't
deal with that,
which
is a shame because you never saw the true strength of him after that defeat to walk away. But obviously he had his own reasons, thinking, I can't be the greatest ever. I'm not going to be the greatest ever. That was down to him, wasn't it? But I think it was a shame because he had so much more to give.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was a spectacle to watch box.
I remember there was one fight he had where it took him 14 minutes to get to the ring because he was dancing.
And
by the time he was halfway there, his opponent was standing on the ropes.
Was it Robinson?
I don't remember. You probably remember better than me. Because he started off
on forever and ever,
screen,
like
a big screen, and there's like a silhouette behind him, he's dancing behind it. Then he comes out and he's dancing down the ramp, and then he turns around and goes back.
It's all the mind games, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's all the mind games.
By the time he got there, his opponent was exhausted, like he's literally standing on the bottom rope, like, come on, let's go, let's fight.
We were fortunate in Birmingham there, mate. We've had some class boxes from
our national,
you know, British level and stuff, obviously.
Yeah.
Who were your local boxers then? Who were the big names?
Mackin, McCracken.
Oh,
we had the McCracken gang down with
the McCracken brothers.
Frotch from your way.
Yeah, Joey Kalik was also
obviously
he was in the class of 2000. Frotch, when
like that.
Yeah.
I commentated with Matt Macklin on Sky Sports when I did the Maymack fight. He was one of the
Robert was the most well known.
Wayne Elcock. All from yours, all
Brummies. But I used to train and spar a lot with his brother, younger brother Spencer. Spencer was like he was a brawler. Robert was the boxer. Spencer was a tough bloke.
Yeah.
Taught me a lot. He did.
Yeah.
Mainly keep your fucking hands up. But he was tough. Yeah, McCracken. You know.
And he's got the JB job, eh?
Yeah, and obviously, you know, he was from what he's doing with GB and obviously with Frotch as well. And then, you know, from an amateur perspective as well, you remember Frankie Gavin? Frankie Gavin was a Birmingham boxer. He was the only British world amateur champion. He was like on an amazing tear.
Mm-hmm.
And when he turned professional, it just never came together for him. He couldn't get it together in the programme. Mm-hmm. But he was like a massively highly touted prospect. He went to the Olympics as a gold medalist.
Mm-hmm.
But he had trouble there with his weight, didn't he? And never made it.
Mm.
But then he went on to win there. It was, like I said, he's the only British boxer, I think, still to win at World Amateur Gold.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
What are the differences between amateur and professional in boxing, do you think? Like styles and that kind of thing?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's completely different. No, it's completely different. It's you know, noise and noise. A lot of it's point scoring.
Mm.
And whereas the pro gamers, they settle a little bit, they sit more on the shots. The power comes into being the movement. Plus the science is a bit different as well, you know. Yeah.
Do you prefer it with or without headgear?
Yeah, yeah, I do. Yeah, personally.
Without?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Why is that?
Yeah. I think it gives them a false sense, really, at the start, you know. And it was talked about for a lot of years, a really long time before they met that decision, you know. And I think it's a good decision.
Hmm? I thought they went away from it and brought it back in.
No, it's, I don't think she's not in easy.
Oh. Yeah. I know they did go away from it.
Mm.
Yeah. You ever boxed? Train boxing, never boxed yourself?
Never boxed competitively. Boxed in and out for a long time.
Yeah.
But I never had a boxing match.
Mm.
Spent a long time with boxers, and obviously in Birmingham we were fortunate to
have plenty around. Did you get much crossover with MMA fighters in the boxing gym? Did you see any coming into the gym?
You know what, they're starting to come through now. They're starting to switch late a little bit more now. Yeah,
it was a late thing because don't forget we went through that whole thing of like they were against us. No, we don't want that. We don't want to be associated. Yeah. And then obviously we've, as a sport, we proved our worth.
Mm.
And a lot more gyms where, like, I remember all, like, you know, a lot of boxing coaches who we know, that they was really guarded. Like, no, you don't go to an MMA gym or why not have an MMA. They were really like, you know, no, it's not happening. They were too old school.
Yeah.
Don't bring them here and don't you go there. If I find out you're going to go there, I'll throw you out the gym.
Yeah.
But then obviously things started to open up.
Now we're so much yours.
And now it's the crossover's huge.
Yeah.
You know, and look, if you're going to be a boxer, then you're going to box, right? You know what I mean? It's the whole thing about MMA, gi, no gi, etc., etc. If you're going to box, you go to a boxing gym.
Mm.
Is there really going to be, has there ever been a world-class MMA fighter going to transgress to do the same in boxing? It's not going to happen. Mm. And it certainly ain't going to happen in the other way, is it?
Mm.
A world-class boxer is not going to come in and perform well in MMA. Obviously, the McGregor thing was the biggest, by a country mile, the biggest crossover. But, you know what I mean, in terms of an MMA fighter leaving MMA altogether, going to boxing and then stringing it all together, taking out contenders and getting world championship belts, I don't think it's going to happen.
It's just changed too much about the game.
Yeah, and it's not going to happen on the other way back. Although, it's far easier, from my experience. If you take a grappling-based art like wrestlers and stuff, it's far easier to teach them to punch than it is a boxer to sprawl or jiu-jitsu or whatever.
Yeah.
I've always found that transgression is a lot easier. You can teach judokas and jiu-jitsu guys and wrestlers striking far easier than you can treat out-and-out strikers a grappling art.
Yeah.
That's just my...
Yeah, no, you are right. Especially the striking arts get affected as soon as you start threatening with takedowns, and it changes everything. You know what I mean? That's why I've been talking about, like, obviously with the Khabib fight coming up. Justin Gaethje comes from wrestling and has added boxing to his wrestling to strengthen his game, and now realised it's much better to utilise his energy in boxing than it is wrestling because he can get fights won much quicker than that. Whereas the other guys that Khabib's faced that are strikers like McGregor and Poirier, they're strikers that have added grappling to their game. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like Conor started out as a boxer, didn't he? I went to his boxing gym actually. That's a nice little spot.
Crumlin.
Yeah, nice little gym that. Really fascinating coach.
Hmm.
So you're staying here for the 254 as well then? You both out here for that?
Yeah.
We're on the long run, mate.
In for the
duration. Yeah. We're flying back together.
Yeah.
I'm driving him home.
Well,
he's parked his van outside my house. Yeah, so he's coming home. Yeah. He's up the road with me.
Tell Sam to put me a nice piece of cake in for when I get home.
Yeah, chicken fillet cake.
Yeah.
What a shit joke that was. Backfire. Yeah, we'll stop.
Hey, will you tell him when I send you a plate, mate?
What's your favourite cake then, Bob?
Sam's lemon, yeah.
Or Victoria sponge.
Yeah.
I like a lemon cake. I might have to try it. Is it good? Yeah.
Oh, it's amazing.
Icing as well. Lemon icing. Mate,
it's just amazing.
Oh.
Yeah, the drizzle.
Amazing.
It's the full works, mate.
The drizzle.
And the roast. Yeah, not the ball in the back.
Yeah. every
that's
Sunday.
That's 3 times you pick me up. That's okay, mate. We're training tomorrow, by the way.
So if you don't see my commentary on Saturday,
every Sunday, every Sunday,
Donkey Kong me now. So.
Every Sunday, my phone will ping.
Instead of throwing the barrels and looking at Dan Hardy,
Godard furniture.
Yeah.
I've got a question for you. How old do I have to be before I can start calling people son?
Before you can?
Start calling people son.
Whenever you want, Dan.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Can you remember the time when you started calling people son?
Forever.
Is that right?
Yeah.
All the way back?
I think so, mate.
They don't have to
You know why, Dan?
Why is that?
I just can't remember names. So I call everybody son. At least I know somebody's going to answer me. I'm crap with names.
He's not joking, mate.
I call the fighter son.
Yeah.
Want your hands up, son?
It's getting, mate. I'll take the piss. Okay, right. Listen, remember, your name's Robert Plant. You fucking come out of the room every day.
Your name is Robert Plant, isn't it?
Yeah.
And they live. And that's a conversation. You live quite close to him, don't you?
Yeah, not far from him as well. Yeah, yeah.
Never tried to pass yourself off as a Led Zeppelin.
No, I mean music.
I think you could get away with it. You know, not musical, are you not? No, you playing?
I'll listen to it.
You listen. What do you listen?
That's about it. Anything, Dan?
Yeah,
yeah. Anything.
Well, we're talking about music, Dan.
But yeah, I tell you what, you listen to Smooth FM. Remember?
Yeah, that's what I've put onto my phone. Smooth FM.
And he gets trapped in the bedroom.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, he's trapped in quarantine, remember?
Yeah, I was quarantined for you. Rough.
Yeah.
It's hard work.
Yeah. It is hard work,
actually. Yeah. I heard your TV was broken as well. Was he being a dickhead?
No, everything was just going wrong that time for me. And what else, what else happened there? The telly was broke.
They wouldn't bring you coffee. He ran out of coffee. He's drinking all
the time. What else was there? Was the fridge broke or something as well?
I don't know.
Yeah, one of them got
paid like 20 fridge, quid. You paid 20 quid for a fucking baked potato.
Yeah. Here's what it is, mate. Here's what it is.
Yeah.
If Michelle's broken, I know. Yeah, bad thing is eating bad seeds.
All good? That was a good conversation. We'll have to do this again sometime.
Frank Mir.
Frank
Mir. He wants me to tell the Frank Mir story.
What's this Frank Mir story?
Oh, yeah, you got to admit that. I knew this one would come out. You might see me knocking clean out.
Is that right? Yeah.
This is my favourite ever Bob story.
I've got some good Frank Mir stories. I used to try. Yeah.
Frank's a cool guy, mate. And we were in Australia, and it was when Frank fought Mark Hunt, and obviously Mark had one of his signature walk-offs.
Yeah.
The walk-off came, Frank was west, all over the place, so I step in, stop the fight. And we're back at the hotel afterwards, and we're having a drink in the bar and stuff, and Frank was there, he was talking to some blah, 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 and we kind of passed each other. So I was like, hey, how you doing, but you okay? He's like, yeah, you know, cool, you know, thanks, blah, 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 thanks for stopping. I went, hey, give the credit to Mark, you know, he could have followed up or whatever. I said, you know, I said, it's okay. As I'm talking to Frank, I see him out the corner of my eye. He's approaching with his drink. So he's approaching, and Frank was like, I said, oh, you know, I thought the conversation was going to end. Frank was, he was talking to me just detail, and he said, what I wanted to do was, like, I just wanted to try and drag. He said, I didn't want to try and take him down in the first round. He's a big guy. He's heavy. Da 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 da. He goes, I wanted to try. And as he's talking to me about the strategy, and Bob disappears and then pops up right in between me and him. And as I'm talking, and he's like that, with his pig, looking at Frank Mir. As Frank Mir's talking to me, and Frank probably won't even remember this. And Frank's talking. He's like, like looking at him, and I'm looking there just thinking, fucking Bob, please just carry on walking and move away. So Frank's talking to me. He ain't moving. He's just there looking like this at the side. And Frank says, yeah, so blah, 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 blah. He goes, strategy-wise, he goes, if, you know, I wanted to try and tire him out a little bit, make him work. He said, then I was going to go for broke in a second, take him down. And there was a pause in the conversation. And just as he said that, Bob's leaning over and he's going, well, you got to get in there first. Hey, your son. And then he's just drinking his drink and he's walked off. And I stood there and Frank's looked at me and he's gone. And I went, I said, it's not nothing like that. Well, you got to get in there first, eh, your son? That was the laugh afterwards.
Brilliant.
And he's just looked at me as if to go, did that just happen? I've gone, it's not, I had visions of Bob fucking flying through the air.
Frank was a lovely guy. I used to train in his gym.
Yeah, quality.
Yeah.
Set up I have met him a few times since, and he must have forgot. So,
yeah.
Pretty safe.
Oh, you're all right.
I think he would have just crushed me like that, wouldn't
he? Yeah. You want to see his daughter now, Bella. She's
made. Did she not make a debut?
She's made a pro
debut. She was wrestling, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was wrestling and then obviously working.
Pro debut?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
She won?
Yeah. As far as I know. I've not checked, to be honest. I just saw the stuff coming up on his Instagram, but she's a hell of an athlete. I mean, she was uploading a bunch of her strength and conditioning a little while ago. Unbelievable. I mean, good genetics from Frank Mir. Same size.
That's what I mean, Dan. Like, imagine this in another 10 years, how this game's
right.
In another 10 years, it's just going to be amazing, mate. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it is now, but it's just all the while. It's non-stop.
Yeah. Are you going to keep going?
Mate.
Yeah?
Till he forgets his fucking name.
Until I forget. He keeps saying I'm the new Leon Tubbs.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mate,
I'll be there, mate, just plugging away.
Because he's the oldest... Yeah. He is. You remember Leon?
Yeah, I do.
Legendary cut man.
Yeah, he was the oldest, amazing guy. Yeah.
He was the oldest, longest serving guy in the game.
Yeah.
And now, obviously, did he pass away?
Yeah, he did. Yeah,
he did, didn't he?
Yeah.
You know, great, Leon's great. Been there forever.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, Bob has, I think now, obviously, I know that Stitch parted company with the UFC. I don't know how long Stitch did with the UFC, but now Bob's like, he's the eldest,
veteran.
Yeah, he's the elder statesman, isn't he? He's the new Leon.
Yeah, and I was blessed to work with Leon Tubbs, mate. It was a pleasure.
Oh, yeah.
Oh mate, he was just class act. Mm. Gentleman. Good at just... I've never seen him get angry, never raised his voice, just got on with his job. He was a really, real good. Yeah,
and great, imagine the stories,
great statesman.
Imagine the stories that he would have pulled out from his days in boxing and how far back he went.
And that's a shame. That's gone with him. Because he would have had some just amazing stories.
Don yeah. Don's a very long-serving comment.
Yeah, yeah, good boxing coach.
You say? Monroe. Rudy.
There's
got the. I remember Leon Tubbs coming into the octagon after one of my fights and wiping my hair because he thought my head was covered in blood and it was red hair dye.
Oh, yeah. I remember you. You wouldn't remember me then, would you, Dan?
I don't remember much from those days, to be honest. It seems like a long time ago now. I don't know why.
Well, funny enough, yours was one of the first names really I ever come across.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I
came across it really because of the area. Like I thought, that's close to us. And Paul Taylor.
Paul Taylor, he was a training partner, we trained together for another great lad.
Some great characters I've done over the years.
Yeah, amazing. Do you remember when you first heard of martial arts, just generally, karate, judo, anything like that?
Dan, when I did that show, I don't even know what it was.
Really?
Honestly, I swear, because boxing was my life. I don't even know what it was. This is you won't even go to rap hands.
We've got a video to shoot this week, haven't we, son? It's going to break the internet.
Oh.
Just wait. We've been trying to get this together for ages. Yeah. We're trying to get this together for ages. But trust me, Bob's going to bust
it. Oh, yeah. No one's ever got me into this, have they?
No.
Mm-hmm. So fair play to you.
Well, this is it now. Fair play.
Bob's going to bust the internet.
That's me one and only, yeah?
No.
I'm retired.
No, we'll have you back on at some point.
I'm going to get him a Twitter page.
Oh, yeah.
You won't.
Next to no context,
guys. No chance.
Yeah, no.
Reeves, I'm going to kill you after Reeves bringing the Frank Mir story up.
Frank Mir will laugh at that. He always used to show up at the gym because he had this gym in Vegas and he'd set it up himself so his family could come and his kids could play in the gym while he was training.
What was his gym called?
Suffer.
Suffer?
Suffer. Yeah.
That's a bit.
Suffer. Yeah. It was right near one of the.
I know how to spell Suffer, Dan.
Well, I'm sorry.
But thanks.
he'd set this place up so like his kids could be there and like his neighbours used to come and watch him sparring. Like they used to come in the gym and hang out in the gym and watch him training and stuff. But the morning sessions where we used to get together and do pads. And he had like a matted area and a cage and a ring and he had some toys for the kids and all kinds of stuff in there. It was a
creche, like
pretty much, yeah. It was a cool spot because his kids are. I mean, they've grown up with him as a fighter.
Yeah, you did. Was Nelson there? Was that a different gym? Didn't you spend time with him?
Yeah, I actually cornered Roy Nelson against Frank Mir.
Oh.
And then Roy and I parted
ways. But it's all right, I trained at the gym.
Became friends with Frank after that, yeah. And I shared a few training camps with Frank, especially for UFC 146 when I fought Ludwig. That was an all heavyweight main card. And was he kind of fighting Cain Velasquez on that one? Sure he was. I'm sure he was fighting for the heavyweight title.
I can't remember.
Because he bought me the Millennium Falcon, the Lego Millennium Falcon at the end of that training camp for helping him out. It was wicked. That's what started my Star Wars Lego collection.
How'd you go on training with heavyweights?
What I always used to do is first and last rounds of sparring, because I was tall enough and rangy enough to be able to challenge him from distance, but I was fast enough to make him work. So I'd do his first round, his warm-up round, then he'd do like sort of four or five rounds with a couple of three different grappling heavyweights. Heavy. Yeah, grappling, yeah, big guys, wrestlers, grapplers. And then I would have his last round when he was exhausted, because he knew I wasn't going to tee off on him and try and hurt him, you know what I mean? I would make him work. And obviously he used to help me out with my grappling, my wrestling and stuff. And then I used to help him out with his conditioning. I used to take him up to Mount Charleston, and we used to run up at altitude.
How long did you live in Vegas for?
3.5 years, about that. But I was driving out to Vegas to train when I was still living in Los Angeles as well, because I was training at Extreme Couture for a while. And I actually went out, I used to stay with Sean Tompkins at his house.
Didn't you train at, when did you train with Bravo?
That was when I was living in
LA. Was that Legends?
Yeah. Always enjoyed that. They were always interesting sessions, especially that when it was Legends in Hollywood, like the original gym, it was rammed. Like Wednesday night, we'd be in there until 10:30. All the windows steamed up. Rogan would show up at the end to have a roll. We'd have Jake Shields passing through and Gary Tonon and why am I forgetting his name? It'll come to me. Loads of good guys will come through. Because Eddie Bravo had quite a unique style, and guys wanted to come in and kind of pick his brains a bit. But they were great sessions, they were.
It's kind of like at the heyday of when people started about 10th Planet. And
Yeah. There was like a proper culture around his gym. And the good thing is, I mean, that culture is now spread, and you've got loads of different 10th Planet gyms that have kind of got their own culture. Oh, what?
Moons.
The moons.
Cores and moons.
Right, yeah. Yeah. But now that the original 10th Planet with all the old guys on the mat they were amazing days.
Do you know what we're talking about here, son?
Yeah.
Training.
Moons.
Yeah. But like when I was training at Frank's gym, like he'd show up, because he had a motorbike, he had a nice red Camaro, 1968 Chevy Camaro. It was beautiful, this car. Red with two white stripes down the front. But I always remember he used to show up on his Harley Davidson, and it used to take him 20 minutes to disarm himself. The amount of firearms he used to carry around with him was ridiculous. Honestly, he had a chain around his neck with a knife in a holster. He had a knife on one ankle, pistol on the other, gun on his back. Then he had.
What the fuck was he expecting?
Mate, I used to call him.
How long did it take you? It was Tackleberry.
I said, mate, that is exactly what I used to call him. I used to call him Tackleberry.
Why did he do that?
Because he just used to love carrying guns. It was his thing. He's a bit of a mentalist, Frank is. Because like you'll speak to him and he's just the nicest guy. But then he's got this edge to him. That like he said this to me one time. He said, if I make it to the end of my life without killing someone, I'll be quite disappointed.
Sounds like someone we know. I was actually.
Yeah, no, could have been me, couldn't it then?
The end of his life, yeah,
could have been me.
That's
what you. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. Who's going to kill first, me or Dan Hardy? Let's take a poll on that.
It depends who's eating ladders.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he always used to take a while to disarm himself when he came into the gym.
Oh, dear.
Considering how lethal he was anyway, with like hands to hand.
If you get into an altercation, mate, he's a big guy, obviously immensely skilled.
Yeah. Yeah, I worked with him through his training camp for Nogueira as well. Remember when he Kimura'd Nogueira and smashed his shoulder?
Oh,
it was nasty. That
horrible, mate. Because you knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
Sitting and watching, I'm like, he ain't going to tap. He ain't going to tap. Bump.
Yeah. Remember the Tim Sylvia one?
I do remember that distinctly, yeah. That was even more like freakishly because his elbow line was out.
Yeah.
So Frank was just...
It was just bones and he broke both of them.
Doing what you got to do.
Mm.
But the big Nog one was just especially bad because you look and you're like, he ain't going to tap. And
yeah.
I was like,
yeah.
You and just, then I could just hear Rogan going, I didn't see it. I just heard the commentary. I was like,
yeah. You knew it was coming because there was a point where it started to slow down. But Frank was so strong. And it went, and it was just gone. And then it's like this just slack, and this, and Nogueira just laid back and kind of put his hand over his
arm. Yeah, it's just, oh, like, oh no. Yeah. Oh no, not again.
Yeah.
But that's, mate, the the mental fortitude of
That Tim Sylvia one was the weirdest though, because if you watch it, you can see the bones snap individually. Because it's two snaps, it goes snap, snap, and it's both the bones on the arm, one slightly higher than the other. But then Tim Sylvia's like, why'd you stop the fight? What's wrong? What's going on?
Yeah, he was going like that, didn't he?
He's like, I'm fine. And like, literally, he really
He passed out backstage, didn't he?
Did he really?
Yeah. He's just tried that again.
When then he saw it on the camera.
The adrenaline's obviously subsided. Yeah. And I think they said he passed out. Yeah. Fuck trying to catch him.
Do you remember when I fought Lee Dosky the second time? Was that, you didn't referee that? That was in Sheffield, Fight UK, Fight Club UK or something.
The second time, didn't they? Yeah. Twice.
I lost my pro debut to Lee Dosky. Because I came out to Pantera, I was wired, I was like, got in there, threw everything at him, and just didn't, it, I couldn't put him away. He was a good boxer, Lee Dosky was, good southpaw, real awkward,
bit of a wily veteran. He's a good guy.
Yeah, he is. I threw everything at him, whole of the first round, and then most of the second round.
What decision?
No. I was fucking angry. So it was coming to like the last sort of minute of the second round, and I'm starting to feel my lungs burning a bit now. And I've thrown everything at him, and he's still there. And I was just, first pro fight, no amateur fights, because there wasn't the option back in those days. And I thought, right, I'll shoot him, take him down, and I'll control him on the floor, a bit of ground and pound. Shot him and double-legged him. And it wasn't canvas, it was like that plastic surface.
Vinyl.
Yeah, and it was just so slippery. And I shot him, took him down, and he hip-bumped over from mount. And as I landed, I bridged to bump him back over and just spun underneath him. He just created enough space, I just spun underneath him, took my back, 4 minutes 59 seconds of the second round, rear naked choke.
Oh.
Burns me. So I got the rematch, because I fought Paul Jenkins after that, which was funny, because I'm walking out, I'm 0-1, and he's 24-19-3 or something like that was his record. Main event in Portsmouth on the pier. Ceiling was like there. You couldn't pick him up to take him down, because the ceiling was too low. Anyway, when I got my rematch with Dosky, I think I was like 2-1 or 1-2 or 2-2 or something like that. And I got this fight lined up in Sheffield, and it was Thursday night. I was sitting at home, and it was late night, and I was cutting weight, and I was like feeling real rough. All of a sudden, the phone rings. My granddad's been taken to hospital, so we get in the car, we shoot over to the hospital, and I spend all Thursday night in the hospital. Wake up Friday, like in the hospital. Friday morning, leave the hospital, go up to Sheffield, cut weight. Weigh in, go back to the hospital, rehydrate there, stay at the hospital all Friday night, because they told us that he was going to die.
Like, I think I may have done that.
I'm sure you were there.
I think I may have done that.
So all Thursday night, all Friday night. So I'd gone to Sheffield to do the weight cut and came back to the hospital, and I was in the hospital all that night. And then the Saturday, I spent most of the day at the hospital before I had to leave and go up to the venue. Got to the venue, I'm fighting this guy that gave me my first pro defeat. I've been up for two nights straight. And I was just so angry. I had just all this emotion running through me. And actually, I don't know whether I've still got the video, but as he was walking out, I was standing at the cage door. I wouldn't let him in. Like I was like ready to go. I wouldn't even let him in the cage. Like the referee had to come and move me away so he could get in the cage.
That wasn't me.
No, I don't think it was.
No, it wasn't me. But just maybe I'm picking it up from your book.
Yeah,
the story of your granddad.
Yeah, so and we had a good bit of a back and forth, and I managed to kind of calm myself down a little bit, but everything I threw at him was full power. And I ended up throwing this body kick, and I'm left footed and he's a southpaw. So like I switched my stance, kicked his back arm and broke it. And he didn't realise it was broken until he threw a jab. And then he was like, oh no, that feels odd.
Stinging.
Backed up, holding his wrist, and the referee jumps in and stops the fight to get the doctor in. And I'm furious here, because I'm thinking he's chickening out and I want to keep going and
the fight. The fight's over at that point.
And I looked over and I could see his forearm was just sagging where the bottom bone had broken. Yeah, bad. Yeah. I watched the fight of the day, Marcin Tybura against Ante Delea, the guy that's been taken off the card this weekend. And he threw a kick, broke his leg. Got taken down. Well, he landed on the floor. Tybura ran in and got mount. and the referee stopped it, and Tibora wouldn't give up mount. He said, sat there, and Delia was like, dude, my leg's broken. And he got up then. It was bad. I asked him about it in the fighter interviews. He had a big scar right across it where he's had it
fixed. Was it what, tib and fib?
Just the tibia, I think. It was just one of the bones.
Oh, God.
Good. Yeah, fun times.
Crazy, eh?
Right. Thanks for joining us, Bob.
It's a pleasure for you to speak to me, Dan.
It's been a pleasure to have you on here, mate. Civil conversation, eh?
Was it?
We don't normally get civil conversation. It normally goes off on all different kinds of tangents and we swear at people. And this was very reasonable for today. I hope you've enjoyed it. And we'll see you next time.
Keep safe.
There we go. Love it.